And this is news. Tehran says the anti-Iranian resolution adopted by the Board of Governors of the UN Nuclear Agency is a clear misuse of an international institution and deals a blow to IAEA's independence and credit. Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei said the resolution diminishes the UN Nuclear Agency to political leverage, which aims to exert pressure on nations. He said the move is aimed at furthering the intentions of the US and the European Troika regarding Iran's nuclear program. Baghaei underlined that the resolution will be definitely met with Iran's response. According to Baghaei, in an official letter, Tehran informed the International Atomic Energy Agency that a Cairo deal signed between the two sides in early September is now null and void. The resolution passed on Thursday called on Iran to inform the IAEA of the status of its enriched uranium stock and bombed nuclear sites. Iran's foreign ministry says the resolution failed to admit that direct military aggression by the US and Israel in June was the reason why the agency's inspections in Iran stopped. Investigative journalist Tony Gosling joined us earlier to comment on the resolution passed by the IAEA against Iran's peaceful nuclear program. He believes that under its incumbent director general, IAEA has no credibility.
International Atomic Energy Authority under Rafael Grossi, I'm afraid it looks to me as if it's time to cancel it. Because it's pretty, I think it seems to me it's got no credibility left. So although it's Iran that has formally pulled out of this Cairo agreement on the nuclear program, which effectively was all that's left after the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, which Trump tore up in his first term, the people that really cancelled the Cairo agreement are actually the United States and Donald Trump by bombing the program. So, I mean, how can you have any kind of legal agreement or IAEA agreement whilst one of the participants in the dispute is bombing the other one's nuclear facilities? Now, not only is this violating the agreement, obviously, it's also an incredibly stupid and reckless act that Rafael Grossi should have noticed that this could spread radioactive material around. It could actually make large areas of land impossible to use for potentially even centuries or thousands of years to come. So this organisation is not really worth the paper it's written on.
The Gaza ceasefire agreement has not stopped Israel from carrying out attacks in the Palestinian territory. In yet another violation of the truce, the Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian in Khan Yunus, located in the south. Also in Khan Yunus, there has been shelling by Israeli artillery. Elsewhere in southern Gaza, gunboats by the regime's military opened fire on Rafah's shore. Since the ceasefire took effect in the Gaza Strip, Israel has carried out more than 400 violations, killing over 300 Palestinians. And in a broader picture, the genocidal war since October 2023 has claimed the lives of over 69,500 Palestinians. Hamas has once again condemned the approval of the first reading of an Israeli law that paves the way for the execution of Palestinian abductees. The movement said the so-called law marks a dangerous step towards formalizing systematic killings inside the regime's detention centers. Hamas said the Israeli law also turns prisons into arenas for liquidation of Palestinians under the cover of legislation. It described the move to legalize execution of Palestinians as a new and brutal form of legalized bloodshed that blatantly violates international humanitarian law. Hamas says the final approval of the law will provide legal cover for killing Palestinian abductees and replace execution for previous slaughter tactics, including torture and medical neglect. The movement said the international community, especially the UN, is responsible for the consequences of this catastrophic and unlawful escalation. A Palestinian prisoners' rights group also expressed deep concern over the law. The Astra Media Office said it will transform Israel's already biased judicial system into an openly political instrument of revenge. Journalist and political commentator Eric Wahlberg joined us earlier to comment on the Israeli law that paves the way for the execution of Palestinian abductees. He believes that by approving the new law, Israel is actually trying to legitimize its crimes.
They like the legal aspect. They think if they pass a law that somehow this will absolve them of their crimes. But they're legislating a crime. It's a crime to just have direct executions on the spot. That's basically what they're doing. They're saying that any judge, quote-unquote judge, in the West Bank, when a Palestinian is brought before them, they can just have them shot. And it's now legal if they have this law. But it's not legal, and it's not. This is something that I hope that at some point the UN can stand up. But unfortunately, it's given everything away to Trump. It basically said Trump's plan, which is to disarm the resistance movement and to let Israel take over and use its own puppets and its handful of Palestinian criminals that it's using to act on their behalf. That's basically what Israel's doing, and it's completely outside of international norms. But Trump operates outside of international norms.
Two Palestinian teenagers have been killed during a raid by Israeli forces on the town of Kafr Aqab near the occupied Al-Quds. Three others were also injured in the raid on Kafr Aqab. The casualties come as a number of other areas in the occupied West Bank have also been seeing military raids and settler attacks. The IOF carried out incursions in Ramallah, Jenin, Tulkarem and Qalqilya. Meanwhile, the Israeli settlers set fire to a car parts yard near Nablus, destroying dozens of vehicles and causing significant damage. Since October 2023, more than 1,000 Palestinians have been killed in attacks carried out by Israeli forces and settlers across the West Bank. Russia says its forces have again captured the Ukrainian city of Kupiansk, located in the eastern Kharkiv region.
Units of the West grouping have liberated the city of Kupiansk and are continuing to destroy Ukrainian armed forces units surrounded on the left bank of the Oskol River.
The top Russian commander also said that Kupiansk played a key role in Ukraine's defense. Kyiv had retaken the city in September, month after it fell to Moscow's troops. The development underground comes as the Russia-Ukraine war is approaching its fourth anniversary. Kyiv has received a U.S. proposal to end the war, with reports saying the peace plan requires Ukraine to give up parts of its eastern territory and shrink the size of its army. Caracas says Washington is trying to make Venezuela its 51st state, vowing that the Latin American country will remain free.
There is a bandit out there promising to be the 51st state of the United States. That is why the importance and relevance of what you do, which is this memory. We will never be a state of any other country. Never. And our people will never obey orders that a handful of stateless bandits and a bandit promise to be the 51st state. We say to the government of the United States and to any satellite prowling around out there, we are free.
Rodriguez also said the Venezuelan people won't accept any form of foreign guardianship. Her comments come as tensions remain high between Caracas and Washington over U.S.'s military strikes on alleged drug trafficking vessels in the Caribbean. President Maduro has condemned U.S.'s efforts to dominate and colonize the region. His American counterpart Trump has not ruled sending troops to Venezuela, while at the same time suggesting openness to hold talks with Maduro. Since September, the U.S. has launched at least 20 strikes on boats in the Pacific and the Caribbean under the pretext of combating drug trafficking. Caracas says Washington's real intention is to topple the Venezuelan government. For months, the United States has been pressing ahead with a campaign of aggression against Venezuela, from striking vessels to authorizing covert CIA operations inside the country. The U.S. has also deployed warships and naval forces off of Venezuela's coasts. Now in Tehran, Iranian students have held a protest expressing their support for the people of Venezuela. A correspondent, Mayim Azadcheh, reports.
Venceremos, we will win. A Spanish message for Venezuelan people from Iranian students across the Swiss embassy in Tehran, which serves American interests. To the protesters here, standing with the oppressed, knows no borders.
This is a gathering by the Iranian students, condemning the threats of the United States against the people of Venezuela. As you are aware, there is a continuous threats by the United States government against the Bolivarian government of Venezuela. And why they are threatening Venezuela? Because Venezuela has oil.
In recent months, the United States has deployed at least 8 warships, including its largest USS Gerald R. Ford, and 40,000 military personnel to the Southern Caribbean, carrying out over 20 strikes on Venezuelan vessels and taking more than 80 lives. The U.S. government has labeled these actions as part of a counter-narcotics operation, a claim that these students reject.
The U.S. has always tried to control independent nations using various excuses to justify its aggression, but our people clearly see through these claims.
As part of a nation fighting a similar battle against Western hegemony, these students feel a strong affinity with others who share their dedication to sovereignty.
Whether the people are from Venezuela, Iraq, Afghanistan, or Syria, it makes no difference in our approach. As we've learned from Imam Khomeini, to stand with the oppressed against imperialism. The U.S. tries to impose its rule on Muslims and non-Muslims alike and will always stand with the oppressed everywhere, just as we've stood with Palestinians.
To these students, the importance of resistance is no less than their academic studies. Trump has reportedly authorized covert CIA operations inside Venezuela. But one thing is certain. Resistance to U.S. hegemony will continue beyond all geographical boundaries.
These students say just as hegemonic powers can unite and exert pressure on nations, the oppressed nations can also come together and resist such oppression and hegemony. Mariam Mazarcher, Tehran.
Iranians have marked National Heroes Day, honoring martyrs whose sacrifices continue to shape the nation's culture of resistance. Families of the fallen, senior officials and cultural figures gathered in Tehran, where the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, issued new commendations for books recounting the lives of 3 martyrs. Moin Amini reports.
Vahdat Hall served as the venue for Iran's National Heroes Day. The event brought together people, including families of martyrs, officials and writers, to honor their heroes and reminisce about their legacy.
The key component of our strength lies in the role of families and women. Their support for the fighters ultimately contributes to hero-making and to the transmission of a culture of resistance to future generations.
Across Iran, people find heroism in those who gave their lives for the Islamic Revolution, the 8-year sacred defense, the nation's nuclear and missile programs, the fight against U.S.-backed Daesh, and the 12-day defense against the U.S. and the Zionist regime, offering the world a different definition of a hero. The program was further enriched by the unveiling of 3 commendations written by the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on the lives of 3 martyrs. The young companions of martyr Soleimani, who sacrificed themselves to fight terrorism and imperialist schemes, perhaps serve as the strongest proof that the future generations of Iran will continue the path of resistance.
The National Heroes Day is named for the day when Martyr Soleimani's letter to Ayatollah Khamenei marked the annihilation of Daesh. 8 years later, Iranians continue to resist oppression, whether through literature or on the battlefield. Moin Amini, Tehran.
Demonstrators in the Mexican capital have for the 2nd time this week staged a protest against the government. They demanded action to curb rampant violence and corruption in the country.
We're fed up with this Morena government, and it's not just the Gen Z, it's older adults, children, many people coming together for the same purpose, to save Mexico from this narco government.
I came to the march because we're living with insecurity that's become unbearable. Everyone who's here protesting has a reason. We simply can't live safely anymore.
Around 100 demonstrators hit the streets of Mexico City on Thursday. The protesters demanded accountability from President Claudia Sheinbaum's administration and the ruling party for the country's security crisis. The participants marched towards the main square where government officials were conducting military parade ceremonies, but they were blocked by riot police. This comes after heavy clashes erupted between protesters and the police at a similar demonstration earlier this week when thousands gathered to protest insecurity caused by powerful drug cartels. Pakistan's expanding military cooperation with China is drawing new international attention as questions grow over this partnership and how it is going to reshape the region's security landscape. From Islamabad, the latest developments signal a shifting balance of power that is now prompting scrutiny in Washington and beyond. Our correspondent Ghanwa Muhyiddin reports from Islamabad.
A new report submitted to the United States Congress has reignited debate over China's rising defense capabilities. Citing Pakistan's battlefield performance during the May conflict, the assessment notes Islamabad's effective use of Chinese-supplied weaponry. The congressional report highlights that the systems sourced from China played a decisive role in Pakistan's recent military success, pointing to Beijing's steadily advancing defense industry. The findings are seen by analysts as a sign that Chinese platforms, long dismissed in Washington as second tier, are now demonstrating reliability and precision in real conflict scenarios. Islamabad's expanding partnership with Beijing through joint exercises and coordinated training reinforces this shift. These trends come at a moment when the United States is expanding its own deployments in South Korea and Japan and intensifying patrols in the South China Sea. Regional observers say the growing China-Pakistan alignment is complicating Washington's broader strategy to contain Beijing's military rise. For Pakistan, the cooperation offers technological upgrades and strategic diversification, while for China, it signals greater influence across South and West Asia.
From Islamabad's perspective, the message is straightforward. China's defense edge is becoming harder for Washington to ignore. And Pakistan's cooperation with Beijing is now part of that shifting balance. Anwa Muhyiddin, Islamabad.
And that is a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye from me, Bahman Roy.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. By Allah's name, we start this episode of today's special. Salam to you, dear listener of IRIB English Radio. Today, we're going to speak about an interesting topic, and that is marriage and responsibilities.
Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
Today is Friday, 30th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 30th of Aban, 1404 of the Solar calendar, and the 21st of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As the ritual of this program, we open Allah's book first. For today, we listen to verses 6 to 13 of chapter Naba. We bless these moments, and of course, we learn. One point.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ألم نجعل الأرض مهادا
Have we not made the earth a resting place?
والجبال أوتادا
And the mountains as stakes
وخلقناكم أزواجا
And we created you in pairs
وَجَعَلْنَا نَوْمَكُمْ سُبَاتًا
And made your sleep a means for rest.
وَجَعَلْنَا اللَّيْلَ لِبَاسًا
And made the night as clothing.
وَجَعَلْنَا النَّهَارَ مَعَاشًا
And made the day for livelihood.
وَبَنَيْنَا فَوْقَكُمْ سَبَعًا شِدَادًا
And constructed above you seven strong heavens.
وَجَعَلْنَا سِرَاجًا وَهَّاجًا
And made therein a burning lamp.
لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The term azwaj is the plural form of term zawj, which means mate or companion, a couple and gender household, husband or wife, from which not only is a man created and through which his generation survives, but also his spouse is counted as the reason for his spiritual tranquility. In other words, the genders are the complement of each other, then they become complete and this makes them a whole since. And this makes them a whole. Since the term azwaj also means kinds, species, and classes, some commentators have rendered it to mean the variations in men from the point of color, race, language, and talents.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through.
Today we continue the topic marriage and responsibilities. Islam emphasizes gender justice rather than gender equality, and the concept of justice can guide the fair division of household responsibilities. Justice, in this context, means that duties are shared based on the needs, based on strength, situation of each partner. Prophet Muhammad's participation in household chores provides a powerful example of how justice manifests in shared responsibilities. Prophet Muhammad's example in participating in household chores provides valuable lessons on humility and the importance of shared responsibilities within the family. These actions emphasize the Islamic values of mutual support and respect between the spouses, contributing to a harmonious and balanced family life.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from series of today's special from Arab English Radio. This is Ali, your host, and we are with you with another topic to discuss. So we have to be well-mannered to our wives. The world takes its path according to a regular pattern. Events happen and show themselves one after another. Our small existence in this vast universe is like a small particle which moves and impinges on other particles at every instant of time. The running of this world is not in our hands, and the events of this world do not occur according to our will. From the moment that one sets foot outside his house in the morning until the time he returns home in the evening, one may be confronted with hundreds of unpleasant circumstances. One comes across a great many difficulties in the arena of life. You might be insulted by someone, have an unfriendly colleague, have to wait for the bus too long, have been accused of something at work, have lost some money, have been robbed, or have come across anyone of a number of similar events. That could happen to anybody, anywhere. You might be so frustrated with usual everyday events of your life that you resemble a time bomb which could explode anytime. Well, you may think that you cannot blame other people or the world for your mishaps. So when you come home, you try to vent your anger out on your wife and children.
IRIB English Radio. Recitation as well as translation of Quran.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ.
And we certainly gave Moses the scripture that perhaps they would be guided.
Short commentary of the Quran. Islamic issues.
Institution of the family in Islam is the most beloved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The life of the infallible. All in all, in today's special, IRIB English Radio.
This is today's special. The function of childbearing remains incomplete without its more crucial part of child rearing and upbringing, their education, orientation, character building, and gradual initiation into religion and culture. It is because of this aspect that family care becomes a full-time job. Not other institutions or even a number of institutions can take care of this function. To be conscious of duty to the ties of the womb is an all-embracing demand includes obligations towards the wife, the children, and other relations, and take care of what is for you, in chapter Al-Baqarah, also refers to the same function. One is enjoined to take care of oneself and the members of the family. The Quran says, O you who believe, strive to protect yourselves and your wives and children from fire. It's our duty to learn, helping each other with our household responsibilities enthusiastically. The policy of joint agreement should be your guide. Assume household responsibilities that you enthusiastically accept. And then when you help each other with those unpleasant tasks that are left, only help if you can do it enthusiastically. By following this policy, you may decide to change your attitude about some of the responsibilities on your list. When you know that the only way to do something is to do it yourself, you may decide that it doesn't need to be done after all. In fact, you may find that what kept you convinced of its importance was the notion that your spouse was supposed to do it. The policy guarantees your mutual care, especially when you feel like being uncaring. It prevents you from gaining at your spouse's expense and trying to force your spouse into an unpleasant way of life with you. It points you in a direction that will give you both happiness, fulfillment, and best of all, the feeling of love for each other.
You know, there are some brothers that have so high expectations and they always expect their wives, you know, to be presentable to them, to decorate themselves, to be always there for them, and they forget about themselves. You know, he always wants his wife to be beautiful and slim when he has a belly this big and he's not taking care of himself. You also take care of yourself. Not just, you know, your wife, you expect her to take care of herself. They say once there was, you know, a man, he was on the scale checking out his weight when his wife saw him. So she told, and she saw him sucking in his belly. So she told him, honey, that's not going to help, okay? So he told her, honey, yes, it will help because I'm trying to see the numbers and check my weight. Take care of yourself. If you expect your spouse to take care of herself, you also take care of yourself. Once, Al-Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth Imam of Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon him, he was seen dressing up, you know, looking very sharp. And the companions were asking him, you know, why are you doing this? Is there a special occasion that you're taking care of yourself, you've dressed up very properly? The Imam alayhi salam said, I have a wife. I have a wife and I have an obligation. And the more I make myself presentable to my wife, the more I protect her chastity, the more she will be faithful in this relationship. Unfortunately, many men, they disregard this. They think only a woman has to take care of this aspect. As for him, he can look however he wants, however he looks. It's not an issue. This is wrong. The religion of Islam encourages both spouses to be presentable to one another, to take care of their looks, of their hygiene.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for joining us. It seems that our time is over, so inshallah we continue this interesting topic in the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Till tomorrow, have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami. La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi. علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Bazaar.
Iran has a rich history in weaving carpets, dating back to over 2,500 years ago. Originally, Persian carpets were woven by traveling nomads to cover floors and gears, which are round dwellings that are easily packed up. Persian carpets are adored all over the world. In fact, the most expensive Persian rug ever bought was a 17th century Persian vase-style carpet, which was sold at an auction in 2013 in London for over $33 million. The legacy and tradition of carpet making still remains in Iran, with intricate designs, lavish colors, and peerless artistry.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Bazaar. This week, we will take a look at rural cooperatives in Iran while shining the spotlight on the production of traditional hand-woven carpets. We want to see how they are made and why they are so expensive. Also, we will check out how cooperatives help support this sector, which contributes millions to the economy. So, let's roll out the show.
High-quality Iranian carpet can cost tens of thousands of dollars, with antique rugs fetching even higher prices. There is so much variety to choose from the floral designs of Isfahan to the intricate fine details of Qom carpets and the strong compact Bijar rugs made in western Kurdish villages. The list goes on and on. But rugs made in Iran's Fars province are perhaps the most traditional carpets characterized by their bold designs. So our journey took us to a cooperative in this province near the city of Shiraz in order to see the production cycle of this valuable handcraft. This cooperative is made up of a chain of related trades for weaving carpets. First, we visited a dyeing complex.
This facility is a massive 22,000 square meter area dedicated to boiling, spinning, and dyeing sheep's wool. The processes are all done by hand using natural plant-based dyes. It is probably the largest of its kind in the province and one of the oldest in this field, with over four decades of experience in traditional hand dyeing. One of the advantages of plant-based dyes is that they enrich the quality of wool over time. Plus, they are non-toxic. The facility supplies bright and elaborate yarns to another part of the cooperative, which is dedicated to weaving.
Hand-woven with the finest materials, including wool and silk, a single Persian rug can often take years and sometimes decades to create. Carpet weaving in Fars is recognized as part of the UNESCO Intangible Cultural Heritage List. In this province, materials are distributed to small villages for women to weave in their homes or in cooperatives. And Fars province is famous for its magnificent Gapbe carpets.
This weaving facility gets its supplies and yarns from other parts of the cooperative. Here, we were able to see the process of how carpets are woven. Looms for Gapbe rugs are typically laid horizontally across the floor, making their production extremely labor-intensive. The process of weaving a Persian rug differs slightly with each variety, but generally speaking, a bed of foundation material called warp is installed into the frame. Starting at the bottom, weavers then feed wool in between the warp, tying knots on each one. A highly detailed silk rug can have around 170 knots per square centimeter. However, most carpets are not valued based on knot count, but rather their materials, design, and overall size. While some varieties of Persian rugs follow design specifications, Gapbe carpets are often completely improvised, with the weaver adding traditional motifs such as goats, trees, and dolls. This weaving facility also offers training courses for handmade traditional carpets. These establishments are particularly important for women. Much of the traditional carpets woven here are made by the dexterous hands of ladies, which also generates income for them. This cooperative is one of 1,900 cooperatives scattered around the country. Currently, there are over 100 carpet weaving complexes and over 5,000 centralized and non-centralized workshops nationwide, too. That's based on figures from the National Carpet Center.
Women in rural areas play a key role in the agriculture sector, which provides wool and silk and cotton to weavers. The statistics show there are 10 million rural and nomadic women who contribute to agricultural production in the country. That's around 49% of the entire rural community. And cooperatives help protect the hard-earned income of women as well.
Despite Iran's rich history of producing handmade rugs, the tribal rugs produced in rural villages could be under threat from a lack of young weaving talent. So cooperatives play a big role in reviving and sustaining this ancient tradition. Such collectives safeguard the rights and income of weavers who frequently receive the least amount of profits from their products. This is mainly because there are a lot of middlemen who make money from carpets. With that in mind, cooperatives also serve another purpose. They organize the chain of production by linking producers of material with weavers and weavers with buyers, which completes a production cycle. There are many opportunities for investment in the field of carpet weaving, especially in the field of dyeing, spinning, and livestock. Millions of Iranians are directly employed in rug making, and many more indirectly. Also, there are numerous export markets available. It might be interesting to know that one of the biggest importers of Iranian handmade carpets is the United States. This is followed by European countries. However, due to the U.S.-imposed sanctions, Americans were forced to find other indirect avenues to purchase the highly coveted carpets, which reduced the profits returning to the country.
Now, hand-woven carpets typically get center stage in the textile industry. But Iran also makes large quantities of machine-made carpets with very high quality. Iran's carpet industry has maintained the integrity of its products while adjusting to modern demands. There are thousands of designs to choose from for nearly all purposes, and Iran also exports its carpets in large quantities.
Iran is one of the top 10 global exporters of machine-made carpets. The major exporters are China, Turkey, India, and Belgium. That's all according to the Ministry of Industry. Based on the same figures, Iran has a potential capacity to produce over 120 million square meters of machine-woven carpets with some 1,300 production units nationwide. Innovation in production has been one of the pillars of speed. According to the Ministry of Industry, Mining, and Trade, Iran exported around $110 million worth of machine-made carpets in the first 6 months of this year. So far, carpets have been sent to 54 destination markets around the world. Industry participants say exports could have been higher last year if it wasn't for border closures due to the COVID-19 outbreak. Iran also exports hand-woven carpets. In fact, the statistics from the Customs Administration shows there was a 14% increase since last year. Exports of these items have generated well over $82 million in hard currency in the first quarter of this year. The government has plans to increase its exports through promoting online sales as well as pursuing Chinese markets. Around 3.5 million square meters of handmade carpet are woven in the country each year. That's according to Iran's National Carpet Center. Roughly 80% of carpets produced domestically are exported.
All right, everyone, it is time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Enjoy.
Have you ever purchased a piece of land on Mars? In the so-called metaverse, you can do that. Metaverse is a subcategory of the blockchain technology, where you can practically live in an entirely virtual world. Today, I'll walk you through an Iranian company that has a lot to say in the blockchain industry.
Artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, and blockchain, these are the keywords to unlocking a whole new world called Metaverse, where giant tech brands like Facebook have expressed huge interest in. But perhaps blockchain is the top layer in the new universe. Accochain is one of a myriad of companies that are working to advance the blockchain technology and its amazing subcategory that's called cryptocurrency.
To step into the blockchain business, you'll need to learn the ABC of the market. Without it, you'd most probably face some serious challenges. But don't worry, this company is here to teach you the A to Z of the market.
When talking about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin is what comes in mind. But a large number of new names other than Bitcoin and Ethereum are emerging on a daily basis. To enter this business, you'll need to attend special courses to analyze the trends of different cryptos. And Accochain has it all.
One of the major projects undertaken by this company was to create crypto trading bots that can help you buy and sell cryptocurrencies at the right time and with peace of mind.
As humans, we get tired. As humans, we go through emotional burdens, which could overcome our reasoning and lead to an irreparable loss in the hard-to-sketch crypto trends. Using Accochain program bots, there's no need to fret about our human deficiencies. The Iranian tech company says it seeks to experience all areas of the blockchain technology. It believes if tapped into, the emerging tech can serve human beings to a great extent and make our lives easier. In fact, the blockchain tech was invented to give rise to the best known crypto, Bitcoin. But today, its applications go beyond digital currencies. This Iranian company says a blockchain stores information electronically in digital format. It can be in the form of games, virtual reality, and augmented reality, or any new wild idea, such as metaverse.
The blockchain technology is revolutionizing the way we live, as it easily combines with other high-tech areas, such as IoT, to give rise to new, more complex technologies. In this burgeoning market, in order to survive, companies will need to be innovative and keep tabs on the latest developments. This company says it's already on track.
Well, many thanks for that awesome report. that, we wrap up our program for today. On behalf of the entire team of Bazaar, thank you. Stay safe.
Good evening to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicists, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We start off this hour's programs with Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. Then it's time for our radio productions feature. After that, we have leaders' speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the honorable leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. And we round up this hour's programs with Spotlight, a program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. Stay with us.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers, sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So today we read a hadith, actually a quotation from the Holy, the Lady Fatima, peace be upon her, addressing her husband, Imam Ali alayhi salam. She says, O Abu al-Hasan, that was the nickname of Imam Ali alayhi salam, or it's his title. O Abu al-Hasan, no, I am ashamed. I feel ashamed before my Lord to burden you with what you cannot bear, what you cannot afford. It means that she doesn't like to kind of put something on his shoulders that he cannot bear. So these words are more than personal reassurance. They are a profound lesson about family care and support and collaboration. Lady Fatima reminds us that in a family, responsibilities should be shared wisely with love, trust, and consideration for each other's capacity. So family care starts with understanding limits. Some parents, some fathers, some mothers, they don't know the limits and they don't consider them about their children. And some children on the other hand. So just as Lady Fatima acknowledged Imam Ali alayhi salam's strength and limits, we too should recognize the abilities and challenges of our family members. Psychology shows that empathy and realistic expectations reduce stress and strengthen bonds. Overloading a spouse, child, or sibling with tasks beyond their capacity can harm relations and create resentment. So collaboration and shared responsibility matters. Family is a team. Duties, whether household, financial, or emotional, should be divided according to capacity and strength. The Quran highlights cooperation in family life when it says, and cooperate in righteousness and piety, but do not cooperate in sin and aggression. So by working together, families can thrive without overburdening any one person. Lady Fatima modeled this approach, love, care, respect, guided every